Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. This is day one of our fourth annual 12 Days of Podcasts.
The never-ending telethon that is our holiday gift to you.
Yeah, we wanted to do something for anybody who's traveling.
Anybody who is working, if you're the one person working during the holidays.
Anybody who is just trying to avoid your family while you're at home, all under one roof. This is when we flood the market. We give you guys 12 episodes in 12 days. And if you've been rocking for us for a while, welcome back. If you're new, we want to say, hey, we do a podcast that is almost 300 episodes in that has never been about grabbing headlines.
No.
It's not about selling our guests out if they say something that, could be seen as like towing a line. We never wanted to be something that does a disservice to the person who sits between us and shares their life story. And given that, I'm sure some of you have shown up today because you saw the news that Cam made.
Yeah, there is the headline that came from this interview.
And by the way, that was never our intention. We never wanted to make a bigger moment out of the fact that Cameron does not believe in dinosaurs.
I mean, it's just a big deal that Cameron would come over here and like spend some time with us. And
for sure.
For us to exploit this headline for personal gain, like for clout.
No, never.
That'd be pathetic.
Never.
Like, if we were to sit here and talk about how Cameron doesn't believe in dinosaurs for like more than just the moment.
If you think that's what we do, you have certainly underestimated us.
Well, yeah, you've gotten us very wrong.
I think it's
we would never.
I think it's frankly disgusting to assume that we would take some quote of Cameron not believing that dinosaurs ever walked the face of the earth.
And we're not going to like send it to the Shade Room or Say Cheese TV.
What?
And say, hey, Cameron doesn't believe in dinosaurs.
No.
Isn't that crazy?
To even imagine that we would take a video clip from the episode that we have up on youtube.com/itsthereal and make it a moment.
We have better things
to do.
Come on. Like, and plus, like, how would we even chop it down? Like, we have an hour and a half interview with him.
This is frankly demeaning to everything that we have built to this point.
Pathetic.
We are not asking an artist of Cameron's stature to come over here.
Like, he has a full life.
What?
And we got into all that, and then, like,
he's promoting an album, by the way, Purple Haze 2, that comes out next week. He's not here to dive into the muddy waters of, like,
conspiracy
whether
theories about
dinosaurs existed or not. Come
like,
on.
And that we
come
would,
on.
That we would make a big deal out of that.
Jeff, I'm disappointed that we had to even discuss this to start this podcast. I in no way wanted to bring this energy here today.
Well, thank you for addressing it.
Yeah. Well, and you too. And we want to thank all the people who ignored those headlines out there.
Yeah.
You know, that is not our purpose. That's not what we stand on. This is a family podcast.
Yeah. Like, we're not TMZ. We're not sending our stuff to TMZ.
Not at all. Not the least of which would be Cameron and that dinosaur talk.
Doesn't believe in them. And that's fine. That's him.
Jeff, let's reset
and
start off the 12 days in the best way we know how. Jeff, who's on the podcast today?
Cameron.
And what's he talking about?
Dinosaurs.
Jeff, when do you want to get into it?
Right now.
Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. 730 Dips, a.k.a. Sword Triceps.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Let a Couple Ring Off, a.k.a. Divorce.
It was Killer Kim from Harlem. If Jim was here, Jim would have mad. Like, I stay banned in one eye, Willie, da 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 da. Jim got all the ad-libs.
No, this is true. Yeah.
I went off some names.
Yeah, it's your third favorite podcast to waste time with. It's the real. Cam, what's happening?
Everything's good, man. Thanks for having me.
No, thank you. It took 270-something episodes to get you here, but we really, really appreciate it.
This was planned.
Yeah, this is planned.
It was 277 that I planned to come on.
Exactly, yeah. You had all the warm-up people beforehand, and you're the headliner.
Congratulations on what y'all doing now.
Thank you very much.
I'm proud of y'all, man.
Thank you.
Watch the growth.
I think that we should just stop after this episode. What do you think?
Yeah. We'll negotiate. If I could be involved, we'll keep
there
going.
There we go.
I would 100% be down.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you let me manage you, then you could be bigger than Brad Pitt and everybody else's management.
Now we're talking. Harlem and South Harlem together, you know?
There you go.
Yeah.
So we have to start off with the most important question I think you've ever been asked.
Okay.
There's a video that you took in like a Walgreens or a supermarket.
Okay.
It's with you and a young female friend.
Okay. When is this about?
About a decade ago.
Okay.
This is different.
Okay, I'm just trying to make sure I do them videos every week. I'm just making sure which one you're talking about.
There was a girl, maybe she chose to run through the supermarket with a jar of Hellman's mayonnaise between her cheeks.
Oh, and I asked.
Yeah.
Okay.
What is the craziest thing that has been off camera that's happened in a supermarket with you?
We do, like I said, we do this like pretty much every week in Walmart. Like we go to Walmart at like 3 a.m. And I would say, okay, let me give, I'm not going to say the dude's name. I'm giving you a dope one. So we're in Walmart one night and me, a female, and one of my friends, male friend. Pause. So anyway, we're in there, it's like around Thanksgiving, so we just in there wilding, like throwing turkeys around and playing football with turkeys and like breaking bottles by accident and shit like that. And but we still bought like about $370-$380 worth of stuff. So it was a fun time. So we're leaving out and as we're leaving out, like the security, like they had undercover cops in this particular Walmart. And as they're leaving out, the cops come over like, hold up, everybody, hold up. And I'm like, I know, we broke man shit. I already know it's no big deal. Whatever I broke, I'll pay for it. They's like, no, we seen that. It's not a problem. You, talking to my friend, what's in your pocket? He like stole some toothpaste and like some it was like.
Damn.
It was like you, like. It was nothing. We just spent $380. He stole like $11 worth of shit. And then he was like, you have to come with us to the back. He's like, Kim, I'm like, I don't fucking know you. Why the fuck are you stealing $11 worth of shit? And we just spent $380 worth of shit. He started to make an excuse. I left him at the Walmart and went home.
If you go food shopping, do people expect things to happen? Do you feel like you let them down if you're not throwing turkeys around?
It depends. No. When we throw turkeys and
play football, giveaway.
Yeah, that's like 3 a.m. It's nobody there. You know what I'm saying? So we plan that shit out. You know what I'm saying? We love going to Walmart acting stupid when nobody's there.
I do like in that video, you assured the people behind the counter. You were like, no, we're paying for the mayonnaise. Like, we're good.
It's in the ass already. You're not going to put it back on the shelf. So, yeah, absolutely. We pay for that. I pay for all that shit because it's on camera. Yeah. That's what got me mad with my man. I'm like, yo, you see how crazy we acting in here? Why the fuck are you stealing anything? It don't even make sense.
He just wanted to outdo you.
No, I think he's sick.
He needed toothpaste.
He's sick. What's the lady, the white girl who be stealing shit for no reason?
The actress. Lindsay Lohan?
There you go. He got that shit. He got the black male version of Lindsay Lohan stealing for no reason.
Have you ever met Lindsay Lohan?
Actually, I haven't.
Wow.
Not interested.
That's fair. Well, yeah. That's fair. Unless
she's right back there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's crazy.
Let's take it back to the very, very beginning. Where are you originally from?
I'm from 140th Street and Lenox Avenue.
You know, you talked about that in your songs. It's well known. You put it on the map. 140th and Lenox. What was your apartment like growing up?
I lived in a 5-bedroom. You know, it's old apartment, Harlem apartments are real long, like railroad apartments with a lot of bedrooms in it. I lived with my mom, my two uncles, and my grandmother.
Man.
And whoever else came to spend the night.
What was hanging up in your bedroom?
I didn't have my own bedroom. I had to sleep like with my mom and my grandmother like the first probably 8 years of my life, and then they like cleaned out a closet and put a bed in there for me. And
damn!
Shit. Wow.
Yeah.
So
that
did you?
That sounds harsh to y'all.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, a closet. Room. You know. Yeah, yeah. No, for sure. Yeah. But did you dream of like bigger things at that young age?
Yeah. Well, of course I did. Actually, one thing about my mom, she always kept me well rounded and. Until I got probably in the third grade, I went to private school for from kindergarten to third grade. I went to Disney World. I went to a lot of plays downtown. I participated in a lot of plays. I did gymnastics. I tap danced. My mom had me in a lot of different activities, and we traveled a lot, so I saw other things.
Wait, later on, when Prodigy, those pictures came out, like, did you, what went through your head?
I panicked because I was like, it's some pictures of me tap dancing somewhere and shit. But now I don't give a fuck. That was a tough time.
Yeah, right.
But I definitely, like, I did a whole show when I was like 4 years old at the Beacon Theater and shit.
Holy shit.
Yeah, like,
Upper West Side.
Yeah, my mom had me in a lot of different activities at a young age. But when I first seen, that's a great question because when I seen that, I'm like,
they're all great questions.
I'm like, yeah, but I'm like, damn, is somebody going to pull out my tap dance video and shit one day? But that's a good question because when I seen that, I'm like, I definitely have somebody, I don't know where they're at, somebody definitely has a video or pictures of me tap dancing.
Well, so when Jay did that, did you think like, ah, he's dirty, like he's got like, you know.
That's part of the game at that time. You know, everybody was beefing with each other. It was kind of natural, so I didn't expect nothing of it. Like, so, I didn't frown upon it.
When did basketball really like, you know, when did you really take to it?
Probably like basketball became realistic for me like at 10. That's when all the shit that my mom had me doing, I figured out this is what I like, you know.
Cut all that other stuff out.
Yeah, I couldn't do backflips and gymnastics and shit. I was good on the rings and shit, but I wasn't really balance beamy and all that. Basketball guy from my block actually lived on the same block as me. When I used to play in the park, his name is Aziz. He took me to Gauchos at probably 10 or 11 years old.
Wow.
And that's when I started playing organized basketball when I was 10 or 11 years old. I kind of deaded everything else that I was doing because I love basketball so much, I started focusing on that.
Did you already know like you were nice?
No, actually, I just thought I was playing in the park. He actually spotted me and guess he saw some talent in me. I was just playing freestyle basketball. And he just took a chance and took me over there.
So would you play at different parks or just like your spot and Gauchos?
Well, I had a park directly across the street from where I grew up at on 140th Street. It's a park right there. So I would play right there all the time. And Gauchos was probably like a 15-minute walk, 20-minute maximum walk from my house. But I would play other places too. My grandmother lived on the east side of Harlem on 110th Street and First Avenue. I traveled there to play. But as I got older, probably 12, 13, we would go everywhere and play basketball, whether it's Brooklyn, Bronx, Queens, wherever.
And I know that you and Jim first crossed paths on the east side, right. And his cousin Dave was really good at basketball.
Right.
And when you guys like faced off, like he was the guy over there and you were the other guy coming in.
Right.
Did you know that he was like legit?
Well, at that time, the way I looked at it, I wouldn't let nobody from the east side beat me in basketball because I just felt west side was better basketball players than them. You know what really hurt them is when me and Dave played one-on-one and I killed Dave. And like the whole east side was so disappointed. My man Sin City talks about that. He's like, dag, they was really disappointed. But my mentality was nobody from the east side is going to beat me in basketball because I just thought the west side was better basketball players.
And what was really the best part of your game?
Really dribbling and going to the basket. A lot of people didn't shoot jump shots like they shoot them now. You know, it's like Steph Curry reinvented the game. So I would drive, go to the basket. It's time I have 40, 50, so I have 60 points before going to the basket. But I dribbled really good and going to the basket was my thing.
Yeah.
I didn't really have that much of a jump shot.
Was Jimmy all right?
Jim was all right for the park. Like, he didn't play no tournaments. I used to get him at that because he used to have, like, a little third-place tournament trophy in his crib. And it's funny because Jim used to always want to beat me so bad, too. He would call me at 3 in the morning and be like, I'll play you right now. For real, we'll go meet in the park at 3 in the morning. And I'll be like, all right, bet. And he'll play me. And I'll come from uptown and he'll come from downtown Harlem. And we'll meet in the park and play. Nobody's outside 3 in the morning. And he would be so pissed that I keep beating him. We actually played, it was a game of 21, maybe like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, in the back of one of our shows when we was on tour. They had a basketball court back there, and we was playing, and I see how hard he was playing at this age. I'm like, yo, dog, calm down, man, you wilding. So I had to turn up on him, and I ended up winning that game too, and I told him I'm never playing him again, ever, no more. It's over. Yeah. I beat you forever. You never beat me in life. I'm not playing you again. He gets mad about it because I'm never going to play him again. I got a whatever and zero record against him, so I'm not going to even risk playing him anymore.
Who else is legitimately nice at basketball?
From Harlem?
No, just like around the game.
What do you mean? Like,
in music.
Oh, in music? I don't know.
Because a lot of people talk.
I don't know.
The game, obviously, is like, you know.
I never seen him play, but I see J. Cole almost dunked up in the All-Star weekend. I never really see too many basketball people play. Maybe because I just don't take them seriously.
Right.
So I don't see them play, but...
Does Johnny Shipes want to...
Yeah, you know what's crazy? I didn't even know Johnny Shipes played basketball, and he so he told me, I didn't even comment on it. So earlier today, matter of fact, yesterday, last night, I was speaking to him, and I'm like, yo, we supposed to have a meeting tomorrow, et cetera, et cetera. He's like, yo, I got to get a surgery done. I'm like, on my toe. I'm like, okay, we have a meeting tomorrow. He's like, all right, I'll make it. I said, what is it for? He's like, you know, it's an ingrown toenail pause. I'm like, he said it hurts when I play basketball and everything. And I'm like, I never even knew Johnny Shipes. This is last night. I never even knew he played basketball, but I didn't even comment on it. I just like scratched my chin like, when do you play basketball, man? But
you're saying he doesn't look like he's in basketball shape?
He lost a lot of weight.
Yeah. And shout out to Johnny Shipes. Yeah.
He lost a lot of weight. He was on a real strict diet. So I'm not going to still say he's in basketball shape, right. But it's like he said, my toe hurts when I play basketball. And I'm like, I'd never talk to you about basketball ever. So, yeah, I just found this out last night.
And Mace. Mace could play.
Mace was good until he was about 15 years old. And then he's not really athletic, that good, that athletic, you know, jumping off, being that fast. But from the time we was probably 10 to 15 years old, Mace was probably one of the five best players.
Damn.
Because he's really good. But, you know, as people get older and grow and get more athletic, they kind of surpass him, but he was real good from the time I would say 10 to 15 years old.
And well, you started playing like organized basketball at that point?
Maybe about 11.
Yeah.
10 or 11, but they was already playing like Mace and a few other people from my neighborhood. They've been playing since, it's a thing called, okay, when you're 10 to 12, that's biddies. And then under 10 is super biddies. So they've been playing since they like 6-7 years old, organized basketball. So they kind of had a jump on me with that.
And how early did like colleges take notice? Like
I started getting letters from college in the sophomore, junior year. Yeah.
And how seriously did you take that? Were you like, yo, I'll go like wherever?
I mean, everybody wants to go to a Division I school because that's the next step to go to the NBA. So you definitely always want to go to a Division I school. When you start getting letters and seeing Division I schools are realistic, you start settling for what you could settle for. But the goal is always to try and go to a Division I school.
Yeah.
Because the next step is the NBA.
So who are some of the letters that came to your door?
Georgetown, University of Miami, USC. I was actually supposed to go to the University of Miami. My senior year of high school, we was 23-0, and we lost in the first round of the playoffs. So that kind of sucked, so I didn't go back to school anymore. And the University of Miami, I didn't take my SATs or none of that shit. I was so fucking pissed. The University of Miami recommended me to a junior college with my man Rodney. He passed away, to a junior college in Texas. So I went to Navarro Junior College in Corsicana, Texas for a year.
But you didn't even like...
For a semester and a half.
But you didn't graduate.
No, I didn't graduate. I didn't go back to school anymore.
But they get your GED.
They bought me my GED to my dorm.
They bought it. Like,
it's like, yeah, congratulations.
$600.
Yeah. They bring it to you. Like, if you're good at basketball, like, I bust it. It's this football player named Dexter Manley, right?
Yeah. He, former Redskin.
Yeah. Exactly. Yo, bro, he got, like, a bachelor's degree and all type of recommendations. And he just admitted, not just, but when his career was over, he admitted he can't read or write.
Yeah.
How the fuck you got a bachelor's degree, you can't read or write? Right. You know what I'm saying? When you good at sports, they gonna make sure that they take care of you and do what they gotta do.
Yeah.
Who was the biggest person that like you saw like on the block? Like meaning somebody you looked up to and you're just like, oh, like that person is who I wanna be like?
I would say if I had to pick one person, I would say from the east side, my man Dave, we're still cool to this day. You know what I'm saying? I had a lot of big homies on my block growing up on 40th Street, but a lot of them was really violent, and everybody was violent. Not saying ain't nothing wrong with that, but like I told you, I traveled a lot. Even basketball, I started traveling, playing basketball, and I wanted something different. There's a lot of people from my block who never been to Jersey at that era.
Right, yeah.
There's like, the mall, what's that? Where's the mall at? I'm like, yo, it's fucking Jersey. Jersey's man far. No, Jersey is 10 minutes away. If you get on the bridge, they didn't even really travel. Some people never been to City Island over there. They just thought everything revolved around right there. So with my man Dave on the east side, he was getting money. He was getting cars, and he liked basketball as well. He used to coach, and, you know, I just see things that he was doing things outside of hustling to provide a better future for himself.
You would even go to Jersey. You would hold cabs, right? Like, and go down to Jersey at Skate Key and all that?
Yeah, Skate Key was in the Bronx. I know what you're talking about. I can't think of the name right now that's in Jersey. But, yeah, we put cabs on hold. Mm-hmm. And because we didn't have any cars. And even at the time, we didn't even maybe have a driver's license. And that was the thing to do, just rent a cab for, like, $25 an hour, and we'll just put them on hold for like 6 hours. But
so it's your driver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm still cool with my first driver.
For real?
Right now.
That's awesome. Day,
shout him like out.
Yeah.
CD. My man CD.
So you guys would run around, and did you have a job like that you would like go to in high school or anything?
Nope.
Yeah.
Nope. I can't say that I did.
Right, yeah.
Only time I did have a job is when I got kicked out of college. I came home and my mom was working for somebody in the liquor store, and they gave me a job in the liquor store. And then she ended up getting the liquor store for herself, and then me and Jim worked in there.
Really?
Yeah.
Same hours?
Yeah, we worked together.
How did you and Jim work together back then?
In the liquor store?
Yeah.
It was cool, because we didn't have no other source of income, you know? So
you guys actually, like, gave a shit?
Yeah, we did. It was dope, because it was legal drugs. Everybody comes in the liquor store. The hustlers, the girls, Friday nights was exceptional, made a lot of money those nights. But, yeah, it was really dope. It was something to do when we wasn't do- when we didn't have anything to do.
What was your guys' drink of choice back then?
Alizé.
Yeah.
For me, I used to drink a lot of Alizé, man. I loved Alizé. I don't even think they sell Alizé anymore, but I loved Alizé.
When did you start, like, really spitting?
When did I take rap serious?
Yeah.
Probably... So I started rapping it. Like, my cousin Bloodshed, he was really into rap more than I was. And I used to just rap with him. And I lived on 40th, so Big L was starting to emerge as a rapper probably when I was in 10th or 11th grade, something like that. And I was like, Dad, people started taking a liking to Big L, and I was like, that's my man from my block. You know, he wasn't like no big-time rapper or nothing. Or I didn't even look at him as a rapper, just my man from my block. And he went to school with this dude named Twan from the east side where my grandmother lived. And me and Twan and Bloodshed used to rap. And Twan was like, yo, you pretty good. Because Twan was like the best that I heard on the east side at that time.
Hmm.
And I was like, well, you think I'm good? He's like, yo, I told my man Big L about you. Because Twan knew Big L and I didn't even know they knew each other. They both went to Julia Richmond. Or Brandeis, I think it's Richmond. I don't want to be mistaken, but they both went to the same school. And Twan was like, "Yo, I told my man Big Al about you." I'm like, "Big Al, that's I live over there. I only come over here on the weekends to come visit my grandmother, but I live over there." So when I got back uptown and I seen him, he's like, "Yo, you rapping?" I'm like, "Yeah, I rap." He's like, "Twan told me you rap," so I rap for him too. And he was liking my stuff, and then we go to school, and Mace used to start rapping and stuff in school. So I was around different areas and different people who always rapped. Then it became like, all right, let me keep two rhymes ready, because every time we see somebody, we want to hear a new rhyme. So if I go to school, Mace will have rhymes. Or I'll go to Eastside, my cousin Bloodshed and Twan had rhymes. Big L is asking to rhyme with me every 3-4 days. You know what I'm saying? Even though I didn't look at him as Big L, it's like my man Mark is asking me to rhyme every 3 days. Herb McGruff is up there with dope rhymes every day. So if everywhere I went, people were rhyming. So I always kept rhymes on deck, but just in case I get in a cypher or something with somebody.
Did cyphers happen at outside of Mart 125?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a little different time, because D from Rough Riders and Y from Rough Riders, they had kind of a store in there or something at that particular time, but they kind of made that their head location. So a lot of artists used to come and try and, you know, because DNY was getting money. So a lot of artists used to come over there and just get advice or try and get down with them. Because Rough Riders didn't pop off just yet anyway.
Yeah,
they
right.
was on the rise of about to pop off. But people gravitated to DNY because they were people persons.
Yeah.
They'll hear your problems. If you need $20, they give it to you. If somebody fucking with you, they'll come take care of it for you. You know what I'm saying? But that was kind of what was going on 125th Street.
So who was outside there?
D.Y. I didn't even know they was from Yonkers at the time. I just thought they was some dudes that came around and just hung out. But sometimes the Locks would come down there, but they wasn't the Locks. You know what I'm saying? All these people, I'm telling you, didn't have deals or didn't have records at that particular time. So Mace, a bunch of different people from Harlem came, but it was just somewhere everybody kind of hung out at that time.
You got on Big L's album.
Yeah, he put me on his album.
Did you anticipate that happening, or was that a surprise to you, or?
No, well, Big L had a vision too. It just didn't come to fruition, and he didn't have the best deal, I believe, over at Columbia. But he seen how it could be beneficial to have a crew. You know what I'm saying? The name of the song I was on was called Eight Is Enough. It was eight people rhyming, including him. He had another song with like Granddaddy IU and some other people on it. That was like five other artists. And he was trying to form Children of the Corn.
Right.
And he seen the importance of that, but he didn't really have the best deal at Columbia. So it wasn't like he could form the crew that he wanted. You know what I'm saying? So that didn't come to fruition. But for him putting me on his album, I was really happy about it.
Yeah. What'd your mom and your uncles and everybody think?
They didn't give a shit.
Really?
Yeah.
Did they know about it?
They probably didn't at the time, to be honest, because nobody wanted you to be like a rapper. Like, that wasn't really something that they seen could be beneficial at that time. You
right.
know
what did your mom want you to be?
My mom, she didn't really, that's a good question, because she didn't really disagree with anything I was doing. At that particular time in life, I had moved out from my mom. Like 10th grade, I moved out my mom and moved with my grandparents. So my grandparents didn't really want to hear no rap shit. They were starting to get mad at basketball trophies. They like, because I used to have hundreds of trophies in my house, and they'd be like, when are you going to bring some money in here? You know what I'm saying? They was getting mad at the trophies. So not necessarily my grandmother, but more my grandfather. But, they when you got older people from especially that generation, you know, they from like segregated bathrooms and and restaurants and shit like that. So they believe learn a trade or get a job or whatever. You tell them you're going to be a rapper, that shit is way far-fetched for them to even fathom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That shit don't even it could happen.
Did any of that sink into you, though?
As far as what?
Like, did you ever believe, like, oh, this is like a pipe dream?
No.
So it was make it or not.
No, I never believed that, because I just always felt that I had talent, and a lot of people told me I had talent. You know what I'm saying? Well, I really thought I was going to be in the NBA, to be honest with you. That was really my goal. Rap was like a hobby that people just told me I was decent at. But when I got kicked out of college, Mace almost got his deals. Mace's deal was almost done, and then that shit started becoming reality. It was one thing when Big L had a deal, but when Mace got his deal, it was something totally different.
Had you met Puff?
I didn't meet Puff till I went on tour with Mace.
Did you think that, like, what Mace was doing was going to, like, blow him up to, like, the extreme?
After he did that 112 song I did.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Mace, what happened is Mace had did a tape, and this dude named Kuda heard Mace's tape and kind of took Mace under his wing and taught him not to be so hard rapping, and took a liking to Mace and told him how to make choruses and so on and so forth. And them two lived together for about a year or maybe more, trying to get Mace's sound right and teaching them to be more for the ladies, because Mace was real hard rhymer. And
Murder Mace.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. So they spent their last money to go to Atlanta, Kuda and Mace, because Kuda used to road manage Biggie Smalls. So I don't even know how that happened. He's from Virginia. He ended up living in Harlem. He found Mace, and they lived together, no money or nothing. They grinded it out together and spent their last money to go to a So-So Def party to rhyme for Jermaine Dupri.
Crazy.
And Jermaine Dupri didn't take them, but other people heard about what they did, so that's how they vibe started going.
You meet Big, obviously everybody knows, like, you show up at his crib, and he's got two girls there, and you spit for him on, like, every instrumental that they got, right?
Right.
Did you think that that was your moment? Like, that was just, like, you know, the one.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You got to. I mean, this is when Big was on top of the world. He was like the king of not just rap, like all music at that particular time. People were loving him. And just to get an opportunity like that, you got to take advantage of it. Like, people come up to me and be like, yo, Cam, can I rap for you? And I'd be like, I bet. And they'd be like, what you want to hear? I'd be like, what the fuck you want to hear? Yo, my nigga, what the fuck are you talking about?
I want to hear a radio
song. Yeah. Do people still try to give you actual physical CDs these days?
not lately, like a lot of
hard drives.
Recently, to be honest, I was at Whole Foods like 4 or 5 days ago. This dude gave me a card and said, put your camera up to it. And you put your camera up to it, and it automatically goes to his whole website.
Whoa.
Yeah. You ain't hear about that?
No, like a QR code or something like that?
Yeah, on the card.
No, I didn't know that like artists were doing that.
I'm glad I'm not late. I thought I was fucking late. Yeah, it's so good. This dude hands me a business card, but it has like the, you know, like the barcode on it.
Yeah.
You put your phone up to the barcode, your camera, just your camera, and they'll take you straight to their link for their music.
But did you listen to the music?
Because he had that type of technology, I did.
Wow.
I was impressed.
Wow.
Then I told somebody else about it, and they heard about it already. I'm like, but y'all didn't.
Yeah.
I beat you guys to the punch.
Or we're just pretending to be nice. Yeah.
Right.
There's a famous like Rap City clip of Mace and you and that girl walking down 125th. Where was your mind at in that moment?
That this is really about to happen probably because, you know, it's far-fetched to get a record deal or anything like that. So Rap City was the biggest rap show at that particular time.
Yeah.
So.
And who's in that? Jimmy's in the back, I know.
Is he?
Yeah.
I know the video you're talking about, Big Les is the lady who was hosting it.
Yeah.
I used to like her.
Yeah.
And
you could tell from the video, yeah.
Yeah, but I don't remember else who's there, but just that segment, you know, being on Rap City at that time, it was really a big deal, so... I was like, oh, shit, this shit is really about to happen.
Do you watch a bunch of your stuff, like, back?
No, unless I'm trying to prove a point to somebody. Like, it was this girl. Like, so I started, you know, everybody calls me Flea and shit.
Yep.
But, like, Flea is, like, regular slang and shit. You know what I'm saying? So a girl younger than me, she's like, you didn't invent Flea. You're not Flea. I'm like, yo. I had to go show her Killer Season. I'm like, how old was you when Killer Season came out? You don't know shit about. You probably couldn't even come outside by yourself when Killer Season came out. Look, I'm Flea and Killer Season.
Yeah,
I invented it. I don't mind in slang, but don't try to take that away from me, shorty. You know what
Wait,
I'm saying?
What's something that that you have gotten credit for over the years that maybe you didn't like come up with?
It's shit that I come up with that I don't get credit for. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I would say like, I had another argument, and I'm not saying I invented this, but I bought it the music business when people be like, no homo.
Yeah.
They be like, Lil Wayne made that up. Kanye made that up. I'm like, nah, that's it from the east side of Harlem. Yo, I got that in Jefferson Projects.
Right.
And so a lot of people argue because the people that they listen to or heard it from, they think they're originators of it. And I'm not saying I am the official originator, but I did bring it to the music business.
Yeah.
And it's no homophobicness. It's just if you say something, just so we clear.
Yeah.
You got to be clear, like, right these days and shit.
Today, if you show up to 1199 Day, like, what's the reaction there?
Sometime they'll probably be shocked because I don't go every year like I used to. You know what I'm saying? Like, I was doing Bloodshed Day, my cousin who passed away.
Mm-hmm.
I did it every day for about 8-9 years, but people were coming for the wrong reasons. People was like, give me a bottle of liquor.
Mm.
Or, yo... I need to talk to you. Or, yo,
I need to show you my QR code. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Everything. So I stopped going because I just didn't feel people were out there for the right reason.
That's a bummer.
Yeah, it is. It really is. So I'll go over to his mural, even his gravesite in Fairlawn, New Jersey, and spend time by myself and vibe. But same thing with her. But people come for me for the wrong reasons. And I'm like, y'all are out here. I'm out here to celebrate, because I don't do the day they died. I'll do the birthdays, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And y'all, they spoiled it for me, so I do it on my own.
Where were you when you found out that Big died?
When I found out that Big died, I was working in a liquor store.
Mm.
Yeah, I was in a liquor store at that particular time.
And what'd you think? Like, that was...
I was hurt.
That was your ticket, yeah.
Yeah, well, I was hurt about that. It's hurt because Blood died... Literally like 5 days before Big, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. 6 or 7 days before Big. So it was like, damn, man. That was fucked up. I was like a fucked up month or 2 months, you know what I mean? So, yeah, it was pretty bad.
And you ran down on Un later on when they were shooting the video uptown.
Right.
What did you say to him to like convince him to keep you around?
I just told him, because Big definitely wanted to sign me. You know, we was talking about it, and even though we didn't get to a paperwork point,
I knew Unedged just got a new deal distributed through Sony, through Epic, Sony. And so when I seen him, I told him, look, I'm the dude Big want to sign. Because he called Un when I was in the house after I finished rapping for him. He called Un. So when I seen Un, when they were shooting the video, I ran down and I'm like, yo, I'm the dude that was in Big's house that he called that he wanted to sign. What we doing?
Yeah.
And we did the deal after that.
And at that point, did you think you were out of here?
You always got to – I'm not one of them people who don't think I'm never not going to be out of here and know anything I'm doing. So, yeah, I thought everything was going to be great. You know what I'm saying? I'm not one of them like, oh, what if we don't? What if we don't? I don't second guess anything I do.
Right. No backup plan. Yeah.
I've always got a backup plan, but I always think whatever I'm going to do is work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So.
When you look back now and you see, like, all the memes on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you see the You Mad stuff. Right. You see, like, certain, like, shots from different movies or whatever.
Yep. You in Pink.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think of all that?
I think it's dope.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
do you have a favorite? And do you send that to people in, like, text threads or anything?
I definitely say You Mad. whenever somebody seems upset, I definitely say You Mad. But you know the gifts. It's so you could go to the gifts and just type my name, and so many different gifts pop up. So, whatever's according, I'll send back. It's one gift that I have when I'm like it's from the Daydreaming video, and I'm rolling the window up.
Yep.
So like when I don't want to hear what somebody's texting me anymore, I'll send that particular gift of me just rolling the window.
Does that help the situation or no?
It depends on who you're dealing with. Like if you're dealing with a crazy girl, it may not.
Right.
It may come to your house.
What about a crazy girl who has mayonnaise?
You know? That's a cool crazy girl. I'm talking about somebody who's
You're talking about the girls who don't know who, you know, that you invented Flea.
There you go.
You know?
Exactly.
So you have the deal with Un. You're doing your first album. What... like, did the label do for you, like, in a positive way? Like, how did you, like, feel your situation was at the beginning?
I did everything he could for me. You know, we shot videos. We did put me on a movie soundtrack, the Wu soundtrack.
Did you have expectations? Like, were you like, well, you know, my friends are getting this, or, like, these guys I see are getting that. Like, I want that same treatment?
I mean...
Or did you even have a vision?
I had a vision, but see, that's the thing is that I had to compromise my vision with his vision because they just been around Biggie. I started recording 5-6 months after Biggie passed away, maybe shorter time than that, maybe 4 months, 5 months.
Where were you recording?
Sony, the Hit Factory.
Yeah.
So everything I did was being compared to Big. You know what I'm saying? Well, Big would have said it like this, Cheese Eggs and Welch's Grape. And Big, and I'm like... yo, I can't be Big, you know what I'm saying? But they were just coming off being with Big and being on top with the biggest hip-hop artists, so I had to listen as well because it wasn't like they wasn't around greatness.
Right.
But at the same time, it can only be one Big.
Mm.
So I'll say my first album was like 50-50. It went gold. Was I disappointed? Yeah. Because you got to realize Mason just did triple platinum.
Crazy.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So... my expectations was at least platinum.
Right.
You know what I mean? So I was okay with a gold album, but I wanted to go platinum.
Yeah.
But I wasn't mad about it.
When you look to get out of that deal eventually and you do go and you enlist Dame and you're like, there's got to be greener pastures elsewhere, did you think that you would end up at a different label entirely, or were you like, yo, maybe this Rockefeller thing like will happen?
So what happened is Un had a distribution deal, and he lost his deal with Epic. The contract says Epic could take whatever artists they want from Entertainment. His label was Entertainment through Epic. He lost the deal, but the deal was Sony, Epic could take whatever artists they want. They wanted me. I ended up staying at Epic. My second album, SDE, is through Epic.
Right.
Yeah.
And they didn't know what they were doing at the time. Dave McPherson, cool guy and all that. But they didn't know what they were doing. There was a female up there who kind of taught me the game like Cam. They're not spending the marketing budget.
It's like when the college coach recruits you and then like leaves or gets fired or
there you go.
And you're stuck.
Yeah. Exactly. exactly like that. So,
so they didn't understand you?
They did after a while, because like I said, somebody was teaching me the game as I was going along. When I first got my deal, I didn't really know the business like that, nor did I care to that much. I thought I'd be in good hands and everything would be smooth. But it wasn't, so I had to learn what the fuck was going on. So, like I said, there's a female up there teaching me, look, they're not spending marketing dollars on this. They're not spending promotion on this. Your record's not being played in this state. Your record's not being played here, but they have money to spend it. So they wasn't doing that. And I went up there and started flipping on them niggas. Like, yo, because I was signed for 7 albums. And I was
seven,
like,
albums?
That was standard deal at the
yeah,
time. Like,
yeah, but that must have like looked like forever.
Exactly. So, me and Dame wasn't speaking at that time. So, now Jay-Z's on top of the world at this time, and Dame is somebody that I grew up with. So, I went and humbled myself, and, you know, we had a conversation, and he helped me out. And he was like, yo, I'll go up there and talk to them. And, you know, Dame just made it clear to them that it'd be cheaper to get rid of Cam, because Cam is coming up here with 40 niggas every day. Y'all got undercover police officers. And he's making y'all uncomfortable. You know what I'm saying? He's not going to stop. So they let me out. And that's when I end up going to Rockefeller.
When you humbled yourself to Dame, what did that take out of you?
It didn't take nothing out of me, because me and Dame grew up. It was stupid that we wasn't speaking over an argument anyway. And, you know, growing up with Dame, we did a lot of shit before record before the music business. So. It didn't take a lot. It was just more of a fact. If you could do it, you could do it. If you can't, I understand that you ain't fucking with me, but at least I'm going to give it a shot.
Did you guys meet up in person?
Yeah, I went to go meet him at his house in Fort Lee.
And who did you know at Rockefeller at the time?
When I got there?
You knew hip-hop.
I knew Jay-Z. I knew hip-hop. I know Jay-Z and all these niggas before they had deals. Like Jay-Z, I remember... And I don't know Jay-Z for never having money, neither. I'm not just talking about before music and all that. But I remember, like, Dame and Jay, and they went to open up one day. I don't know if it was Penn State for Method Man. Method Man was hot. Mm-hmm. And Jay-Z didn't have a deal, but they had money. And me, Jay-Z, Bleak, and Dame rode out there to Penn State, and Jay-Z opened up for Method Man, and nobody was even really there. It wasn't that crowded yet. But just the opportunity for him to get to go open up for somebody like Method Man at that particular time was pretty big.
Totally.
Yeah.
Did you know people like Big Face Gary, like, before you went over there?
Yeah, I knew. We knew each other from the hood.
Yeah.
But Big Face Gary wasn't even at Rockefeller. I was at Rockefeller before Big Face Gary got there.
And so you get over there, you're going to Baseline. What was your relationship with, like, the different producers over there?
I ain't really have a relationship with anybody. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You got to realize I'm coming in from just getting jerked around my last deal. I know the business. Dame is my friend. I'm just going to use the tools that I have in front of me to get my crew together as well. You know, Jewels and Jim Jones and Hal Rowland and J.R. Ryder and whoever else that we dealt with at the time. And, you know, they had a studio. We went to the studio every day, because if somebody was in it, we'll go to the smaller studio. But we just had a crazy work ethic to where we wasn't going to not miss this opportunity, because these opportunities don't come twice.
And and that led you into the whole, like, K-Slay mixtape, like, culture, just, like, flooding the streets.
Yeah, because K-Slay became real hot at the time, too, doing his mixtapes, and K's from Harlem. So we was like... Look, man, it don't make sense to you take advantage of Kay as well, because Kay was on fire. We both helped each other out. So it was real appreciative that he hosted the tapes. But before I even started messing with Kay Slay, I was doing Clue tapes and Ron G tapes.
Yeah, yeah.
But Kay Slay is the one who helped the Diplomats out, because what happened was we was like on so many different mixtapes. And I know it sounds old, like right now, like, the person whoever invented the toilet seat, you don't really give a fuck. But we were the first artists to do mixtapes as artists. Like, everybody used to be on a DJ's mixtape, and I'm like, yo, we on 14 different mixtapes. We could just put our own music together and put out our own mixtape, because Juelz didn't have a deal, Jim didn't have a deal, nobody had a deal. So I was like, I'll use this as a marketing tool and get K-Slay to host it and heat the streets up, and that way they could get deals too, because Rockefeller didn't necessarily want to sign them yet.
Yeah. Hmm. So
wait, before that.
Yeah.
Is it true that when you signed to Rockefeller, you were like broke?
No, I wasn't broke, but I wasn't rich. I've been living in Jersey since my first deal. I wasn't going back across the water, but I wasn't where I wanted to be. Was I driving good cars and living in a condo? Yeah, I was.
But I heard a story that like you were chasing down like a $10,000 check, and then you lost it.
Oh, that's yeah, yeah. Basically, we was making ends meet. Shit was cool, but what happened was, I got a check for $10,000, and me and Zeke had a plan to go do something. That wasn't about paying bills or nothing else. That was about we wanted to go buy some work, and we knew we had like a golden opportunity. It was like a situation to where we couldn't lose. And we had just got a check for $10,000, and we was like, we're buying nothing but fucking weed with this. And we lost the check, though we thought we lost the check, and it was underneath a car, and we were super happy. But it wasn't like to pay bills or nothing. It was like to get rich.
Yeah.
And it worked.
How quickly did you and the state property guys become friendly?
Everybody was cool when I got there. You know, I didn't have a problem. Everybody was real cool. Sparks and Petey Crack is still my man. And Beans and Bleak, they got on a song that Just Blaze produced.
Yeah.
When I first got there, it was pretty cool.
Yeah. And did you think that, like, the work that you were doing with, like, Arsonist or, like, with Just or, like, even the stuff you did with Kanye, like that you were defining a certain sound that you guys would own?
Nah, we just picked beats that we like. You know, we didn't know that we was going to become like the Dipset sound.
Right.
We were just more vibing off beats that we could relate to. You know, at that time, you know, Juelz was taking a train. He's like when I had Juelz with him, he's like a 10th grade dropout. You know what I'm saying? And people had a lot of different pains, so I think all that music reflected the pain that people was going through, whether they was going through it at the time or previous.
Yeah.
Yep.
So
what made you switch your flow, by the way?
I gotta reinvent yourself. I was in my first deal in 1997, so it's 2019. For me to even still be doing this is pretty dope.
Yeah. You know, but I mean? Like, so, to go from, like, your first flow to your second, I mean, like, you know, because your first album sounds like one thing.
Right.
And then you started doing, like, the nursery rhyme sort of stuff. Mm. And, like, what inspired that?
Just basically my first album, I did a lot of dope shit, and it was going over people's head. So I'd be dumbing shit, a lot of shit down, because it's like, to me, it'd be a waste if you don't get it. And then sometimes too, this girl put me onto this. It was like this girl I used to deal with, and I used to argue a lot when I didn't have to deal. And she used to like, Jay-Z was just coming out, and she really liked Jay-Z. And I really like Nas. I like Jay-Z too, because that was my man. But I was like, yo, Nas is dope, man. She like, nah, I like Jay-Z. And I'm like, nah, Jay, I fuck with Jay, but you don't fuck with Nas. She's like, Cam, when I go to the club, I don't want a dictionary with me. And I'm like, damn, I'm like, so she sold me this shit. And I'm like, damn, shit be going over people's head, yo. You know what I'm saying? And people want to dance sometime too.
And yeah.
You know, so she's like, Nas is like a long car ride type of joint. I'm like, damn. So I take all that shit into consideration. You know what I'm saying? So certain things you got to dumb down so people understand, especially if you want your shit heard in the club and you want sometime when you do a show, not saying Nas will have the records. I'm just saying what the girl was saying because I'm
a
big Nas fan. But sometime when you're doing a show, you want people to sing along with you. But if you say it too much, you can't lower the music so they can fucking sing along with you. You know, you may just have people sitting there like, dope, but they can't really sing along with you.
You can't wind it back. You can't be like, oh, what do you say there?
Yeah.
Right, you know
get
mean?
That genius annotation.
Yeah, exactly.
So I remember you going up to Angie, and I remember where I was when I heard this. You went on Angie, and you guys were talking about the Rockefeller deal and Taliban, and actually, even before you were Dipset, you guys were, was it the Legacy?
That was something we was just coming names that we was coming up with. It wasn't like we ran outside with it, but, you know, we was just coming up with names, and I think we had that name for like a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, not a good name.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Legacy had no legacy.
Yeah, exactly. You didn't even have a legacy at that point.
But Diplomats took off and right. I know Johan's over here, and he was saying before, like, you guys are so known, obviously, for the Eagle, and you're so known for Dipset and all your merch and everything. What'd you think of the Ramones t-shirts, you know, that came out with, like, the Diplomats? And it's just, like, they took that and became such a big thing, but that wasn't necessarily, like, sanctioned by you. The band, the Ramones. They got the, like, the black and white t-shirts.
Hey-ho, let's go.
I didn't even see it.
But they got the famous, like, t-shirts, though, and they redid that with your guys' stuff there.
You gotta show it to me. I didn't even know about it.
All right, we will. Yeah. So in the moment, you're over at Rockefeller, and when you did Come Home With Me,
okay,
did you know that that was like a perfect classic album?
Nah, but it felt good.
Yeah.
You know, it felt good. It felt like we was in a good space. We was on a good label, and I was around people who genuinely cared about my career.
It felt different.
Yeah, because, like I said, Dame was pretty much running the company, and I was like my big bro. So for us to, we probably didn't speak for like a year and a half or whatever. So for us to be cool again and him teaching me things that I didn't know already, it was genuine, because it wasn't like he really needed to make money off of me. He already had money.
Yeah.
But he was really just teaching me a lot. So it felt good, and it was good momentum making that album.
This is your shirt. This is the Ramones shirt.
Who are the Ramones?
The Ramones were a punk band back in like the 70s.
They all looked the same. They wore like long hair and had like bangs.
So that
or whatever.
Was their logo back in the 70s?
And then they flipped it to do a Dipset like thing.
Let me see. No, what I'm saying is this. The Ramones made it like that recently?
No. Someone else.
So
who was it?
Originally the Ramones, and then they flipped it to be...
Yeah. Another clothing label did a Dipset thing.
Okay, but what I'm saying is this. This wasn't their logo back in the day. Just this?
No, that was all their logo.
That was theirs.
Okay, this is theirs, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know what it is. That's you know what that logo, you know where that's from?
No.
It's the back of the dollar.
Well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? So it isn't like we came up with something genius. You know, we just copywrote it and did it the right way legally. But if you look at the back of a dollar, that's the same thing as on back of a dollar.
Hey guys, it's Jeff here from the podcast, and that is Eric over there.
Hello.
We have sold t-shirts from our website to 43 states and 8 countries. And by the time that these 12 episodes are done,
your
12 days of podcast,
yes,
we want to sell to the rest. 43 out of 50 states.
Okay, so
we sold to 8 out of 182 countries.
Okay.
Got to finish it out strong.
Okay, so we are missing Arkansas, Missouri, Mississippi, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, and Vermont.
We're missing Guyana. We're missing
Vietnam.
Malaysia.
Italy.
Oh, the... We're missing people from Italy. The food experience curated by that fat chef. I forget his name.
He needs to buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, Uruguay. We're missing Nicaragua. We're missing...
Panama.
Yeah, just all of Central America.
You know, I'm shocked that we haven't sold one. Not one.
Mm-hmm.
To Mario Batali.
Mario Batali is the fat chef who does Italy. Mario, if you're out there, buy a couple of triple extra large t-shirts.
It's thereal.com/shop, and now back to the podcast. We've spoken about this a lot. Like, we had our live show with all of Rockefeller up there, and we spoke about it with Jim in terms of, like, the recording of Oh Boy, right? Mm-hmm. And, like, the politics behind it, and that the beat was just sitting there for a year, and you went in, and you're like, no one's touched this? Like, guru, put it up, and I'm going to do it right now. What we haven't heard, though, is once you get to Hot 97, mm-hmm. and you pressed enough, what is that scenario like?
I don't remember, to be honest. I just know that part that you're talking about. I wasn't sitting there for like a year. I was sitting there for about a month.
Oh.
And Juelz kept pressing me to like let's basically steal it. And not steal it, because it was sitting there.
Yeah.
And everybody been in the studio, whether it was, say, Property or Bleak's Crew or Jay-Z, and everybody's been in and out the studio 10, 15, 20 times. And Juelz is like, still here, man. But And I'm like, yo, just leave it. And we waited about another 2-3 weeks, and nobody touched it. I'm like, fuck it. And we just end up doing it. But as far as pressing enough for anybody, I can't remember. I am not going to say and lie, but enough definitely looked out. That's my man.
Yeah.
But I can't remember that part. But the song was so good, and it felt really good. It really didn't have that much of a problem taking off once we gave it to people.
Yeah. Right? Like not mixed, like just like
We just rushed it out so we
And then Dame was like, let's make a video, like
because it was kinda like we stole it, so we was like, yo, hurry up and just do what we could do to it, and we gave it out. But yeah, it was really good, and you know, Flex played it, Enough played it. We got a lot of love on it, but I don't think it was one of them situations where it was forced on people. It was a really good song. It was something different when you heard it. And I just think people grasped to it because it went nationwide. Oh. It wasn't just New York.
Yeah.
Right. This is a little bit like different, but like, who are your comedy influences?
Influences are who I like.
Both? Like,
well, my favorite, the only person I haven't met, and which is my favorite comedian, and I'm not necessarily for his stand-up, more for his writing, is Larry David.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's like my number one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like we've talked about that. Yeah.
So Larry David, you know, growing up, I like Martin, Eddie Murphy, Richard Pryor, Kevin Hart is, you know, God bless the dead. I really love Patrice O'Neal as well.
That's legendary. He's got a new documentary coming out on Comedy Central soon.
Oh, yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's dope, man. Yeah. I love Patrice O'Neal. D-Ray is dope.
Yeah.
Did people always tell you that you had a good sense of humor?
Yeah, people tell me I'm funny.
Yeah.
Because I could be
But growing up, too, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So people used to tell me I play too much growing up. You know what I'm saying?
Well, could you snap on everyone, like, at baseline, just like, you know?
Yeah, like, I like to snap and talk shit. But, you know, that's one thing with me, like, growing up, people like, oh, you play too much. But I know when to turn it on and turn it off because it's like, yo, tough guys to me, and I'm not saying I'm tough. I'm just saying, like, yo, real tough guys don't act tough all the time. Who actually wants to act tough all the time and be mad and making friends? I like to laugh and have fun and shit. Like, that's pretty dope to me. And, like, if you come into a situation where you have to defend yourself or be aggressive or whatever the case may be, that's the case. But walking around frowning all day, that shit is whack. That shit is real whack.
Yeah.
Right.
You mad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why you mad. Yeah.
What do you remember about shooting the music video in the back of that limo in the tub?
What means the world to you?
Yeah.
Was it cold?
No, nah, we was in Vegas.
Can you bring that back now that you're living out there?
It was pretty fun. It was dope. I remember the one thing I do remember about that song, there was a girl on that song, and I just remember, you know, we wrote the lyrics for her. Juelz wrote her lyrics for her. Juelz is in that video. People don't even know that. He's asleep in the limo and shit. He's in that shit asleep. And it was just a headache because all of a sudden, it's like a girl we just knew from wherever. And she's on the song. And then once the songs came out, she had management and she wanted a deal and an attorney and this, that, and the third. And it became a headache to deal with because we was trying to put her down with us. But
is that why she's not, like, credited?
I have no idea. I ain't gonna lie why she's not credited. But maybe Juelz wrote the shit, so...
Credit him.
He should be credited, you know what I mean? But I remember it was just, like, a big deal. But all of a sudden, it's these three different managers, an attorney, and a boyfriend. And I'm like, you know what? Just keep her. You know, we don't got time for that. So, we trying to do business.
Come Home With Me is, like, ringing off everywhere. What... Like, and it's interesting, like, considering, like, your career, you're so popular in places like Chicago or D.C. or down south. What other areas in the country really meant a lot to you in that time?
When Come Home, we came out?
Yeah.
Ohio.
Yeah.
You know, Ohio treated me real good. Columbus accepted me with open arms when I went down there. At a club down there, I used to have, like, the best weed ever. So I used to charge people just to smoke with me, not even necessarily sell it to them. Like, yo, I didn't want to, that was like my scheme, like not to sell weed, like charge you just to come smoke with me. So it's not like I'm selling you shit.
Right.
You know what I mean? So Columbus, Ohio is really dope and Chicago is really dope. Those are the two cities that I would have to say showed a lot of love.
We were talking with John Monopoly.
Yeah.
And he told us about...
That's my man. So I was just at his birthday party.
Yeah. We ran into Don C, actually, last time we were in L.A., too.
Right.
And we were talking to him about the same story. You guys went down to Miami, and you guys were very close. Don was drinking heavy back then and ended up on the top of some chick's car, like, bashing her, like, you know, like, windshield in. You remember that?
That was in Chicago.
Oh, okay.
She was in Chicago. The first time I ever went to Chicago, John Manop and Don C booked me to come to Chicago, the first time I ever went there.
To their club?
I don't think it was their club, but they were promoters.
Gotcha, yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're promoters, and they booked me. And I remember me and Jim getting there, and we was like, yo, you got to take us to the Good Time Projects, because we used to watch Good Time, yeah. And we like, we want to see the fucking projects. And I remember Don C being like, this is fucking dumb. Like, yo, why the fuck do y'all want to go there? People are dying over there. We ain't give a fuck. We like, yo, we got to go there. Even the driver who picked us up from the airport was like, yo, I don't understand what this is about. This is dangerous to go in these projects. And we was like, nah, we got to get a picture. And this is like the plastic camera.
Oh, yeah.
You had to take a picture with. So, yeah, Don C took us over there and shit. And then we went and performed at the party that night. And then that situation you talked about was outside of the, was outside of the party he actually booked for us. And I thought he was a cool dude, so I was like, yo, you don't need to do that to anybody.
When you were on that phone call with Alan Grumblatt and Angie and 50, and you were defending independent music.
Like, you were ahead of your time. 50 obviously called it a graveyard, didn't think much of that whole model, but, and we were re-listening to that again today. You knew your stuff. You knew how much Jim was getting per album. You know how much
other artists
were getting on majors. You know, it made too much sense. How'd you feel in that moment?
It was just a heated moment at that particular time, you know. I'm always on top of my business after I got jerked around like I told you, but I haven't heard that in years, so I would have to listen to it again. But it was just more about probably defending whatever I was talking about business-wise at that time.
Yeah, I think what also, like, really stuck out to us was that, like, you started off, like, you were like, what's up, baby? Like, he's like, what's up, baby? And you guys were good.
Yeah.
And then, like, he must have said something, and then you started, you know, yelling Curtis, and then it just sort of all exploded in the moment.
Did you guys talk, like, within that?
What you mean?
Like, after that phone call.
Yeah, we seen each other. We spoke. Mm-hmm. I spoke. We was together probably about a couple years ago. We was trying to put some sitcom shit together.
I meant like in that, when like you guys were beefing. Like, did you guys talk at all?
No.
Did you, we've heard this too, that he would send like, you know, funeral notices or whatever to the label and like really like play it up and send black flowers or whatever. Like, did you find that to be like normal, or would you just like, oh, he's playing?
Was it funny?
Yeah,
I don't dwell on that shit. Like, if you want to, we battle and we battle, and if it's gonna be street shit, it's gonna be street shit. It just was all music, so I didn't really take it as anything else. Same thing, like when we seen each other, we talked about like, yo, that was some music shit. We had fun, it was cool, and we moved on with it.
Yeah. After you finished your Rockefeller stuff, and you know, you had different albums that performed differently, and you got out of that situation. You ended up over at Asylum, which was mostly known as a Southern label at the time. They had, like, you know, UGK, and they had Mike Jones and different. What appealed to you about that situation, and why did you sign there?
It was a lot of money. It was a lot of money they gave me, man. And they was doing real good splits. It was like 80-20 splits or 70-30 splits. So I could have stayed at Def Jam because L.A. Rita came to Def Jam and was trying to reboot it. But not only it was Southern, what happened was Kevin Lowes and Leo Cohen and Julie Greenwald, which was running Def Jam, all went to Warner Brothers.
Yeah.
Asylum was under Warner Brothers. So to me, it was kind of going to the same system that I had just left. So yeah. I was like, I'm cool. I just went plat, sold 2-3 million records with these guys with the Diplomat album, Come Home With Me, Purple Haze.
Yep.
I'm going to the same system that been working for me with these guys. So even though it was Asylum, it was still underneath the
Warner umbrella.
Which had the people that was running Def Jam. So
totally.
It was cool.
When you think back to, you know, your Def Jam days and Rockefeller and the movies that you made and like the presence that you had there, did you feel like you could do that without that system, you could do it like independently and have that same sort of like energy?
At this time I built my own fan base with Diplomat. So I was thinking, look, even like with Rockefeller, it was dope to be there and Dame teach me all that, but it was always a plan to have my own label and my own artist. And it wasn't just Rockefeller, and it wasn't just Def Jam, like, to me, Southern artists did that first. Master P did that way before everybody.
Yeah.
Then Cash Money came and did it. And I was like,
Jay Prince. And, yeah,
exactly. All them dudes did it before, to me, before New York people did it. And I'm like, we got all the record companies in New York, but we're giving the distro deals to the people from down south. But you had to build your leverage up to get those type of deals, to get a joint venture, a distro deal.
Did you talk to Master P about that when you guys first got to know each other?
Nah, because by the time I met Master P, I already had Diplomats popping. But I definitely gave him credit for him paving the way for my generation, for me to see that you don't have to sign a regular deal, you know, because, like I said, I went to school in Texas, and everybody was Ice Cream Man, and he's from New Orleans, and Texas is not that far, so they was loving him in Texas.
There was a time that we would see you around town and bump into you, and you're always like, yo, I'm going to do movies, I'm going to do television shows. There was talk of, like, Netflix deal and, like, different situations. Was acting or writing or directing always, like, a passion of yours, or did this, like, develop, you're just like, I want to do something different than music?
After the movie, when Final Destination came out, I wanted to do movies.
Final Destination?
Yeah, because I did a song called Death on my first album. Like, Death is Chasing You, so on and so forth, whatever. And to me, Final Destination came out after that album. Not saying that it was related any type of way, but it was like the same thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, Death is Chasing You, so on and so forth. And they didn't have to even rhyme about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah. You can
don't give musicians or rappers that much credit. There'd be some people, I mean, no, it's regular song, but some people are telling the whole story and have to make it rhyme.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could write a movie and it don't even have to rhyme and shit. So to me, that's kind of easier.
Yeah.
Depending on what the situation is. Like, I could do a whole fucking movie around one song title. So you got a song like Death, and then you got six Final Destinations that make like $1 billion.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I'm like, I could.
But then that girl doesn't want to hear that shit in the club.
Yeah. Yeah, but she'll go to the movies to see the shit. You get what I'm saying?
Do you still go out to the movies, or are you more a Netflix guy?
I go to movies like at 12. Like, I'm going to movies tomorrow, 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Really?
Wait, tell us the address.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I like going to the movies, but I like going when
when no one else is there?
I don't go on weekends. Mm-hmm. I go at like 1, 2 in the afternoon, and I'll go with, like, because there won't be nobody there. I went last week to see Will Smith's movie.
Right. How was that, Gemini Man?
Yeah. If I didn't get to see it because I went to see the 3D shit, and it kept fucking up. And I was just me and this one other couple in there. And they was pissed. They was like, you know how fucking hard it is to get a babysitter? They just kept yelling at the people, and they kept starting the movie over and over and over. They was pissed off, and they ended up just dead in the movie. So I didn't actually get to see that movie, but I went. And tomorrow I'm going to see, was it Black and Blue or whatever it is, with Tyrese.
Black Tie?
I don't know. Tyrese got a new movie out with a police officer and all that, so. I'm going to go see that if I wake up in time tomorrow to go check that out.
So we have another podcast that we do with The Locks, right?
Right.
Where we review movies.
Yeah.
Right. And we watch a lot of movies that we've all seen, you know, Trading Places and Jurassic Park.
Black
and
Panther.
Like, yeah, but we've also seen movies that, like,
maybe you haven't. Like, You've Got Mail or Coco or...
Like, Jadakiss had never seen a Pixar movie, right?
He also never seen Jurassic Park.
Which is crazy.
Right.
Yeah.
What movie have you been, like, given a chance to see that you were just like, I never would have watched that recently, and you're just like, yo, this shit's dope?
I've never seen Jurassic Park, neither.
What? Never?
No, I'm not really.
What are you doing after this?
I'm interested. I fight with people about dinosaurs and their existence all the time.
Wait,
so,
what?
Yeah, like,
You don't believe dinosaurs existed?
I'm not believing or disbelieving. It's like no proof, like, because they throw these big bones paws up in a museum, in the museum, and be like, yo, these are the people that were here before us. I mean,
that is the proof.
Yeah, yeah.
You're looking for the proof. That is the proof.
So these bones didn't,
Was the evolution class your senior year, second semester?
Strong enough to put out in museums, and they didn't crumble anything like that. I'm not necessarily going for that one. I'm not saying it didn't happen. If we get more proof on it, cool. I'm not going off museum facts.
There are like 2,000 years of proof.
What's the proof? Give me some proof. Besides the bones or whatever.
Let's go to the museum together. It's only like 11 blocks from here.
I've been to every museum when I was young. I'm like, word. So they just found all these bones and glued them together.
Yes. That is exactly what they did.
Nah, I'm not sure I'm going to go for that one. It sounds like more of a moneymaker to me. Let's act like it was dinosaurs.
Wait, do you believe that the world is flat?
Nah, okay. I believe the world's
flat. I was about to like have like an aneurysm.
Yeah, heart attack.
Yeah. No, just that dinosaurs didn't exist. All right.
I'm not saying they did or didn't, but I'm not going off museum facts or finding bones. Like, we need a little more proof, and I don't know whatever proof you could give me, but... Who found these bones?
Yo, pause. Our group like chat is
real
gonna be
scientists.
All,
yeah,
yeah, like all dinosaurs. Like
real scientists. Man. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Archaeologists. That's their. Yeah. That's what their training's
Indiana
in.
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. Yeah. But have you seen Indiana Jones?
Who pays the archaeologists?
They get grants.
Okay.
That's not like a.
Okay. They get paid to do this shit.
Yes, by like
I wish I could be an archaeologist and be like, I found some shit. I'll be at the beach every day with like, yo, look what I discovered and found and just make some shit up.
That movie pitch would be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Are you insane?
Let's get Larry David on the phone.
100%. Let's get it.
Yo.
By the way, okay, so now we have to like really clear something up. Yeah. One time you hit up Eric.
Okay.
And said, hey, I want to cast Jeff, me.
I did. I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
In a movie.
Yeah.
No.
You go, I got the part.
No, it was a video. But like, I wanted you to play me in a video. Yeah. I remember that. I wanted you to have a pink mink on and sing my whole verse. Is that
idea still possible?
Yeah, I've been here.
I seen you and you was with it. But, you know, I still haven't put that song out, yo. I really remember that because I was like, yo, this would be dope if he did that shit. And I'm like, yo, if Jeff did that shit,
yeah.
Yo, by the way, everybody thinks that I'm the kid who does the Jewel's, like, Santana's Town.
Yeah, I seen that remake.
No, everything that's me.
Yeah, Jack in your style.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I seen that.
I might be him for Halloween.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to think I'm going to be me for Halloween. Yeah. Somebody just asked me, so I'm going to go with myself.
That would be great.
Yeah.
That would be really great.
But by the way, Eric isn't my manager.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but you hit me up like...
Yeah, you know what? I think y'all guys are twins.
He is a twin.
Yeah.
He's a twin. His. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. We got another brother.
Well, I just think you guys are twins.
Yeah.
I just hit you up. That's crazy that you're a twin. I knew it.
Yeah.
I felt it.
Yeah. Boys. You've helped so many people get on, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of artists who, let's not even talk about style. Let's just say like you've helped a lot of artists get in the game and become a name, right? Mm-hmm. Who are the artists that you're like most proud of giving a shot? Like, maybe there was no money involved, maybe there was money involved, whatever it was, like, who's an artist that you're just like, I look back and I'm just like, yo, I did a good service for that person in their life?
Everybody, you know, not saying I did a good service, it's just more about seeing it come to fruition, you know what I'm saying? It's not about a good service, it's about, you know, none of this shit is guaranteed. Same thing like you was asking me earlier, what do I think wasn't going to work? I think everything's going to work, but realistically, it might not work. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So any project that I did that became successful, or any artist that I worked with that became successful or had a good run or had a good time or became aware, even if it's for a small period of time, I'm really proud of that.
That's dope.
So it's not just one particular person. It's just the fact that we had a mission and accomplished it.
We were talking to Bun. And Bun has, like, the worst music videos experiences.
He has some great ones, but there's ones that did not work out. Like, what are your craziest music video experiences? The ones that were disappointing or, like, did not go right?
Or just crazy behind the scenes?
My only thing I would say that I could think of, because we always have fun at our videos, is... Probably I shot the video Get It in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
and it was the coldest day in Ohio. In like 50 years, it was like minus like 13 or 14. Not wind chill factor, like when you're driving, it says minus whatever on the dashboard.
Yeah. And
the cameras froze when we were shooting. And like it was really bad. Like it was hot sodas and we would put them on the ground for like 30 seconds and they would be frozen and shit like that. So I would say that was probably just the worst experience weather-wise, but... Every video we shot, we always have fun at.
I can think of a couple of really fun things, which is Emmanuel, our friend Manny, was in the 357 video as one of the cops, which is crazy.
She's in Get 'Em Girl 2 video.
Is she really?
Yeah, it's when me and Zeke did like the fake. Are you talking about Emmanuel who works in Atlantic?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, now she's over. Now she's at Capitol. Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Well, she's in.
You haven't been checking out her LinkedIn?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Yo, by the way, Manny, I'm sorry. Yeah, she has Manny. No, I love Manny. Manny's my homegirl.
By the way, Freaky Zeke added me on LinkedIn. Yeah. And I was just like, why?
He knows you're a twin, man. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So
he'd do better off if he was hitting up my twin brother.
Right. No, pause. So,
I'll take that. Yeah. Pause. Again. Yeah.
Yeah, she's actually, we did like a fake Maury, and she, we begged her to be in it. She didn't want to be in it. She's like the girl it both wasn't our baby.
Oh, we got
to
check this video out.
Yeah, it's called
Get Also, we talked to Shari Bryant, and she said the first time that she was on a private flight was when you refused to do some like video unless you were flown out there private.
Okay.
And then they did it for you. They worked miracles and got you on that private flight.
Yeah, Shari's from my grandma's building. She's from the east side of
Harlem. Yeah,
so $11.99.
Yeah, exactly. So, Shari's family. But I remember a funny story about Shari. I remember she called me one time. Shari Bryant, she had called me, and she's like, "Yo, Cam, I'm in a store. Somebody following me. I need your help." And I'm like, "What?" She's like, "I'm hiding in the store right now." And she happened to be like right across the street from where Zeke lives. And I sent Zeke down there. Called him up to go get her.
Holy shit.
And she was like hiding behind some chips. And
by the way, Zeke, she's very short.
She is, yeah.
Yeah. And Zeke is like, "Shari's, nobody's outside." She's like, it's like, okay, maybe I'm paranoid. But that was crazy, yeah.
This meant a lot to us. I'm sure it meant a lot to you too, but like, you know, as guys who love this business and love the ins and outs of the business too. Right. Seeing you on that stage at Jay's B-side show, whatever issues you guys had over the years, whatever talk there was from either you guys or like people around you or people who had no idea and just wanted to talk, we got a heads up that it was happening, and we watched it on people's, you know, like Instagram lives and all that. It felt awesome to see us to see you guys on that stage to perform Welcome to New York City to give you the stage, and you and Jimmy were there, and everyone's dressed up. What was that night like for you?
To be honest, it was pretty smooth. You know what I'm saying? Like I said, I knew Jay-Z before record deals or anything like that. So it may have been tension when I got the Rockefeller, but he kept doing what he's doing, which is I'm very proud of. Just his growth outside of being an artist, you know what I'm saying? Just to know where he came from to where he's at now is really dope. And it wasn't like I needed to validate myself with that night, but to be honored to be called to do that, it was really dope, you know what I'm saying? Because we ain't really out do too much beef. It was more he say, she say, you know, entourages against other entourages. So, you know, when they called, we didn't even talk about shit about except for doing that.
And yeah.
Just how much respect we have for each other.
And how much, where you had to get your suit.
I keep a few of those on deck. I don't even have to go do that. Those are in the hot closet hanging out right now.
Did you run into Nas backstage?
I ran into his crew. You know, I knew some people that, I met Jungle that night. I never met Jungle before.
Really?
Wow. Yeah, I met Jungle. And a kid named E that I knew for years from Queensbridge. I seen him, but I didn't actually see Nas that night.
Okay.
Yeah.
Your mom is one of the great follows on Instagram.
Yeah, she's crazy. Yeah.
Did you know that she would take to that technology so well?
Sometimes I don't like it, man. So she's overdoing it. Too many
Throwback Thursdays?
Nah, it's too much. Yeah. Nah, she's always arguing. I gotta be like, you can't be arguing because I'm gonna get mad. You, my mama. But sometimes you instigating this shit. You know what I'm saying? You gotta chill out. But you know, she has fun with it in this school. But sometimes I gotta tell her that you gotta get permission to do certain shit, man, because you be wilding. She like sometimes she even called me and be like, you know how much it's taking in me not to say anything about XYZ, you know what I mean? So, but people love her. She has fun with it, so that's cool.
Yeah. Do you love Instagram?
Instagram is cool. I like Instagram. I don't take Instagram as serious as everybody else because Instagram isn't my come up.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people take Instagram seriously because a lot of people popped off because of Instagram.
Yeah, and that's all they got.
Yeah, and not only that, it's just like, you know, I'm happy that that wasn't my come up, even though it's profitable for a lot of people, including myself. But, you know, people panic when their flights aren't up or this angle isn't right.
Right.
This girl went crazy. So I need an outlet. I'm on 40%. Like, so I thought that was, I don't panic to like 3%. You know what I'm saying? Like, so just being fortunate enough not to, for that not to be my come up, like I have fun with it to where other people, I think they manufacture fun and act like it's a good time and all that, but they take it so serious that they can't really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I don't really like fuck with Halloween like that because it's manufactured fun.
Yeah.
But that being said, last year I was Dennis Graham, Drake's dad, and I killed it.
Who's that?
Drake.
Drake's dad, you know, Dennis Graham with the mustache and the fedora and everything.
Yeah. Send me a DM of that, man.
Jeff, when we pulled up at Up and Down last year and Jeff got out of that car, people thought it was Dennis Graham.
Oh, yeah.
But not in like some blackface.
I don't get that from you.
Yeah.
One thing that you said to us one time, I was emailing you to be a part of sketches when we were like doing that.
Yeah.
And I emailed you, and you were like, "I don't get my emails until 3 weeks later."
I don't have no notifications on my phone. If you have to, like, even if you text me, I gotta just check every 10 minutes on none of my phones because it's just annoying. Like even Instagram, like. I have my notifications on one time. That shit goes off every 4 seconds. Yeah. Like, yo, how the fuck do people just every 4 seconds buzzing in their pocket? So I turn
because
off
because the more you respond, then the more people. Yeah.
Nah, not even respond. I'm talking about my phone's in my pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Is it vroom, vroom,
vroom, oh no, I get
vroom,
it. Yeah.
Like, yo, that's annoying all day. And then you look and it's like _Tammy127. Like, yo, come on, man. I got other shit to do. So I'll just have my text on. Not even my text. I just randomly check my text every 5-10 minutes.
So it wasn't you just like curving me?
But, no, not at all. But okay. if you call me, I'm going to pick the phone up. That's, you can, my
I think,
phone
I think we called you once and bitch, and,
I have 3 phones.
Yeah, okay.
We gotta make sure we got the right
That's
number.
That's too many.
Nah.
I think British picked up. Yeah.
Maybe sometime I'll give a phone to somebody for a while.
This was great too. Spotify, you guys did a show maybe a year and a half ago.
Right.
So we pull up and we're standing outside with like Lenny S and Emery, right? We're across and we see that there's a big crowd outside, so no one's getting in. And I think ASAP Mob was opening up for you guys.
Yeah, there was a police presence.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, there's been a million Dipset reunion shows, right?
Right.
And this is like the only one that Flex wasn't involved in.
Right.
You know, there's like a million, Spotify is doing this one.
Right.
So we're standing there and we're talking to Lenny, we're talking to Emery, and we're like, all right, maybe we'll cross the street, maybe we'll go in now, but it doesn't look like the crowd's moving. And all of a sudden, we look to our right, and who's walking down like 8th Avenue but you, and a parade of a million people behind you.
Right.
And you were not stopping. You were not going into the show. You just kept going. And we're like, well, fuck this. So we followed you.
Yeah, we followed you.
It was like a parade.
There was a parking garage.
And it was Manny was there trying to like negotiate things. Shout out to Tuma, who was at Spotify at the time.
Right.
And I know you did make it into the show later. But
yeah, I was about to leave. It wasn't Spotify or Tuma anybody. Police just was so upset because they didn't have it under control that they was taking it out on everybody else, and everybody was following me. And I'm like, look, I'm never going to get in if this many people are following
right.
me.
Right.
So. And like these two idiots joined in.
It was cool.
It was like 102 people.
I was on the way home at that time. I was like, it's over for the night, but. They convinced me to go back, so I end up going back.
Can you tell us a good tunnel story?
The tunnel?
Besides bringing like 150 people at a time and...
No, I didn't have that much pull. That was after I got my deal. But the dopest part of being tunnel, I remember just being too young to really get in the tunnel. Maybe I wasn't. I was like maybe just at the right age, but it was really dope to see Eazy-E in there one day.
Wow.
And I was like, fucking, yo, Eazy fucking E, man. This is crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
When you,
I think I was like 17 or some shit.
When you think back about like who you were back then, when you 17-year-old Cam,
right.
And you and Jim, whatever, you're working at the liquor store or you're running around, you're playing ball, like you listen to like his project or see what the reaction is like last year and think about all the moves you're making and you're just like, goddamn, like we have done a lot of shit and we're respected across the board. Again, like, you know, you don't need the sort of you don't need people to tell you, oh, well, you know, you've made it now that you've been on a B-side stage. But like, I'm saying, like, where you're at now, you ever look back and think this has been a long, crazy journey?
Not really, because it's still going on. Yeah. Sometimes I may think of moments or somebody may remind me of something and say, oh, you remember this or remember that. But I don't sit there and dwell on stuff too much. And I really don't like, unless we doing shit like this.
Yeah.
Like, yo, remember when? Like, nah, because I'm trying to worry about tomorrow, too. You know what I mean? When it's all over and said and done, yeah, we could do that. Like, right now, we're in the process of gathering pieces and bits and stuff for my documentary.
Oh.
So,
do you have a distributor for that?
Not yet. I'm not sure who I'm going to do it through. I have some options, but I'm not going to say because it's not inked in, yeah. You know, inked in writing.
By the way, I don't know if you have yet, but you should hit up Sife, who like has like tons and tons and tons of video footage of everything. Yeah, I'm sure he's got stuff.
Sife Sam?
Yeah.
Yeah, we were supposed to do some comedy shit together, me and Sife. You know what I'm saying?
That's what's up.
Sife is dope. But yeah, just going through the documentary process is dope. But just on a regular and be like, yo, remember this? Remember that? Nah, I'm still trying to worry about tomorrow.
Unless you're with some girl who has no idea, like, about, like, you know, certain things part of your career.
Yeah, and I got to bring up Flea, shit like that. You know, when you discrediting my future, that I got to bring the past up.
Does your mom, like, have, like, scrapbook or, like, you know, any sort of, like, memorabilia from, like, your career? Does she keep, like, a hold of that? No?
Everything is on the net.
Yeah.
Just about, I mean, she got old picture books when I'm a baby and like 4 or 5 years old. But
what about like triple, you know, XL, you know, like promo shirts? Not that.
I got a lot of shit like that in my storage. I got a storage unit with a bunch of old shit like Scissor and promo and all that shit. But just laying around, nah.
Oh, Jeff found the dopest throwback today, right? It was a promo t-shirt, no, a long sleeve shirt, like from 99.
Yeah.
I seen it on her Instagram story.
Yeah.
You say fuck Giuliani.
Yeah.
I seen it.
Fire.
Today. Thank you.
Fire. Yo, bring that shit back.
Yo, like, now's the time. So many people are hitting me up being like, Cam has to bring it back.
But fuck Giuliani.
Yeah.
Man.
Yo, now's the time, too.
What's he doing? He's fucking up still? He's
what?
Violent?
Oh.
Absolutely. Every single day. Every single day he goes on TV.
We need to talk about dinosaurs and like what's going on with the president now. You know, Trump's the president. Yeah.
Thank you.
So his buddy is fucking Giuliani. Like, they're like peas in a pod. They're both morons, right? And who knows what's left of their like brain, but like they run around and they do like corrupt shit, and now they're getting caught and they say the corrupt shit on TV as if like that like
exonerates them.
Exactly. Yeah. And so now they're going to be dragged into, you know, these
hearings.
Well, good.
Yeah.
I never really like Rudy, Giuliani.
No, I saw the shirt. It said fuck Giuliani.
Yeah, he was fucking up my block at that time. It was really fucked up. You got to realize he came. And I'm not saying what David Dinkins was doing was right, but it was more lax than it was more cool. That nigga was real, had a lot of tension, a lot of police presence, and that shit was annoying. Even like, and it wasn't even racial with him. He was like shutting down John Gotti and a whole bunch of other shit too. He was just an asshole. But
When you came back from school, or actually when you went to school, did people think like, did they think something of you for like, you know, not staying local?
No, nobody stays local who's good, unless you go to St. John's. Everybody wants to go to North Carolina, or everybody wants to go to NC State, or Iowa State, or wherever. Like,
I knew a lot of girls who went to NYU.
Yeah,
they're not playing basketball.
They don't got a basketball team. Yeah.
I don't know. There's like the Fighting Violets or whatever.
Fighting Violets. Exactly. But nobody wants to play at home. Everybody wants to go play on TV, and at that time, maybe St. John's, and maybe the second closest was Syracuse that was playing on TV.
Yeah, that's where I went, yeah.
I wanted to go to Syracuse back.
Yeah? Did they send you a letter?
Yeah.
Jim Behan. Shout out to Jim Behan.
Yeah, that's my man. But it didn't
You could have worn orange.
I know, yeah.
I would love to went to fucking Syracuse, man. I was a big Jim Behan fan, you know what I mean?
Play zone?
Whatever, zone, man, man, whatever. Yeah. You know, I was a big fan of them. They had a lot of good players when I was young.
Pearl Washington. Yeah.
They had Sherman Douglas, Derek
Absolutely.
Coleman.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of players. Conrad McCray.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of dope players, so I wanted to go to that. That was like my first choice, but I think they recruited whoever they recruited, but I was happy just to get a letter from them.
You've obviously played Syracuse before, right? Like, performed there?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Do you rock a jersey or what? Like,
It depends. Like, I don't sit there and plan my outfit out. Like,
oh, you're not fabulous.
Nah, I just go in my closet, and I got a section of clothes I wore, mm-hmm. clothes I didn't wear, and clothes that I wore that been seen before that I can't wear no more,
yeah.
and clothes that I wore that nobody seen before so I can still wear it. Like, that's how my closet is sectioned
up. Who organizes your closet?
I have a female who organizes my closet okay. like, every All 2 right. days.
That's nice. A
friend of mine. Now, yeah. That's a real fucking job, yo.
Yeah.
Yo, when if she's not around for 2 weeks, it's fucked up. It's really bad. It's really bad. Like, that shit is a real job, yo. I'm really lucky to have somebody like that because you don't trust everybody. I was going through that when she wasn't around, and I'm like, I can't trust everybody in my fucking closet.
You know what
I'm
saying? Yeah.
So I appreciate her.
Do you have the... shower curtain with your face on it up at your spot?
Nah. I don't.
Have you seen it in person?
Yeah, I make them.
No, of course, but like yeah. hanging up somewhere. Do you ever walk into someone's spot and you're like, oh.
It's kind of weird. No homo. But yeah. This basketball player in Seattle, I went to scrimmage. And no disrespect.
No, of course.
That's my man.
Yeah.
But
showing support.
Yeah, he has my shower curtain.
I used to have one, and then Lindsay Lohan stole it. Yeah,
exactly. I would prefer only girls.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah.
You can buy the diplomat one if you got to sell the diplomat shower curtain as
it's
well.
It's a statement.
Right.
Yeah.
You have a new album coming out.
New album coming out on December 16th.
And you're excited about it.
Very excited.
That's something that, I don't know. I don't know how long you've been working on it. Maybe a while, maybe not. Mm-hmm. But another project that's been in the works for a while is the one you did with A-Track.
Okay.
And from what we heard, it's been like start and stops, but something that's been going on. Is there any update on that?
A-Track's probably pissed at me right now, you know what I'm saying? Because what happened was we was working on it, then we lost contact, then we worked on it, then lost contact. So we finished it. We just did a deal.
Congratulations.
And, thank you. We did a deal with my people over there, Empire. Shout out to Ghazi. And
big shout to Ghazi, yeah.
Amir.
Yeah. So we supposed to get ready to put this project out, but I'm like, yo, it's the 15-year anniversary of Purple Haze. We got to wait. And he's like, come on, man, we can't wait. I'm like, soon as this project is done, top of the year, we're going to put our project out.
That's dope.
So if he's not busy now this time, then the project come out. But we did do a deal for that with Empire about 2 months ago. But I just wanted to make sure this music got out the way. But it's really dope. Came out dope.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, look, we're super appreciative of the fact that you came through.
Come on, man. It's way overdue, and I'm happy you for having me.
No, thank you so much. And we appreciate you telling, you know, your whole story until now, even if you don't normally, you know, relive those days. And
no, yo, listen, with you guys, is cool.
Thank you very much.
And with everybody else.
Listen, I appreciate that you look forward to, especially tomorrow when you go see that movie. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Appreciate you guys, bro. Thank you.
Cam.
Nah, no problem. It's all good.
That was
appreciate
dope.
You.
Thanks, everyone, for listening to this new episode of A Waste of Time with It's the Real, the first of the 12 days of podcast. Jeff, if you want to find out more about us, I'm Eric with the curly hair. You're Jeff with the glasses. Together, we are It's the Real, no apostrophe, no spaces. If people want to find out more about this podcast, it's called A Waste of Time with It's the Real. If you want to find out more about what's going on with us, where can they go?
You can always go to itsthereal.com, itsthereal.com. Go to itsthereal.com and sign up for our newsletter. Go to itsthereal.com/shop. Buy a t-shirt today, especially if you are in 7 states and 174 countries.
It's so close.
We're so close to the countries now.
It feels like it's possible in the next 12 days.
Yeah, North Korea.
We haven't sold anything to North Korea?
I know, it's crazy.
That is wild.
Also, you can find us on Twitter at It's The Real, Instagram at It's The Real, YouTube.com/It's The Real.
We asked people if they wanted a shout out on this episode, and we said the way to get our attention is to add random celebrities. So, who are we shouting out today?
All right. I'm going to start with Charisma, who said, not at random, but because she's the baddest bitch, Trina Rockstar. I want to shout out I Got Juice, who wanted Michael Jackson to know about our podcast. Yeah. I want to shout out David Clark Marshall, who said, Mr. Porter.
Hey, Mr. Porter, buy a t-shirt.
Holla at Johnny D said, Pee Wee Herman, check this out.
Yo, shout out to Pee Wee Herman, buy a t-shirt.
Lex or Todd. Todd and Lex said, yo, tell Cam I'm still rocking Hey Ma like I am in my 20s at Sadat X.
Hey, I want to be very honest. We recorded this episode 2 months ago.
CBX Web from LA said David Lynch.
Yeah, you know, David Lynch.
Buy a t-shirt.
I think David Lynch is definitely listening to this. Uncle Sam MC, who is not Uncle Sam, the guy who sang that song. I don't ever want to see you again.
Wait, is it Big Sam?
Oh, Big, yo, if it was Big Sam from the
East Side Boys?
From the East Side Boys, Big Sam who drank from a gasoline can.
It'd be a different story.
So
who did Uncle Sam want to shout?
He shouted out Mekhi Phifer.
Yo, Mekhi Phifer, buy a t-shirt.
Dylan Andrew Diaz said the Ellen Show.
Shout out to the Ellen Show.
Ellen DeGeneres.
Hey, Ellen, buy a t-shirt.
Timothy the First said Jason Alexander, famously of Seinfeld.
And also up on our wall, shout out to George Costanza.
Yes. Haven Credible said at Brian Jackson. Brian Jackson.
Let's find out.
He works with Gil Scott Heron.
Okay, well, shout out to him, an accomplished musician, deserves a t-shirt. Go buy one.
OG Danzito said Mike Tyson.
Yo, Mike should definitely be aware of this podcast.
Not Your Name said Real Mick Foley. Mick Foley, who we also have an action figure from.
He's right here. He should be aware.
Coral Lopez said Vince Staples.
Okay.
Hopefully Vince actually sees that and comes on our podcast.
That would be
great. Somebody else said Vince Staples, too. That dude, Effie.
Yeah.
There's no way I can actually shout this guy out.
Okay.
But he said Vince Staples. I think you guys can understand where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
He has a name, and I'm preferring to bleep that out. Joey Blaze said Amanda Bynes.
Shout out to Amanda Bynes.
Bun Diesel said, you guys are great with artists who are bubbling. I'm going to throw Reason from TDE on there. Plus, I hope we get some new Two Jews and Two Black Jews. Just throwing this out there, but you should watch House Party, the first one.
All right.
MJA773 said Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
Wow.
Of Home Improvement.
Yeah. Shout out to JTT.
Yeah, but he did at the wrong one. It seems to be a...
Now how are we going to get the word out to Jonathan Taylor Thomas?
You know, Kyrie the Great said Foggy Raw, who is not a celebrity, sorry to say.
Oh.
Josh Lavis said, shout out the Fantastic Four, a.k.a. Hovengers, a.k.a. Joe Buttons with an S.
Okay.
As Joe Button, Rory, Maul, and Parks.
Shout out to those guys.
Penn Season
mm-hmm.
said Frankie Muniz.
Okay. Shout out to Frankie Muniz.
Jeez Louise said Lisa Ling.
That's Cousin Lou.
And said, good afternoon, Lisa. JW Smiles said the Goonies from BGSU and Wale.
Shout out to Wale.
Jarrar Hussein added Anderson Cooper.
All right. Hey, a local New Yorker, get a t-shirt.
Emilio Estevez said, you already know, at Donnie Wahlberg.
Jeff?
Donnie Wahlberg follows us.
We did know.
Yeah. And Abu Calves, our man out in London town, said, Jeremy Corbyn, fix Brexit.
High, lofty expectations when you tune in to A Waste of Time with It's the Real. Jeff, we got more episodes on the way?
We do. Also, Cash Money Josh said, at Kevin Hart for real.
I agree. We tried to get Kevin on the podcast. As always, Jeff, not for real, for real.
Sure.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.